Coming to you from the enchanting Rainbow Room, high atop St. Pete Athletic in the Warehouse Arts District, this is the Catalyst Podcast, Arts Alive. My name is Bill DeYoung. We're here today with award-winning journalist, former journalist, I should say, and an author, Tamara Lush, also known as Tara Lush. We're going to get to that in a minute. I wanted to read this off because it sounds good, and you can explain these to me. RWA Rita finalist, Amtrak Writing Fellow winner, and the George C. Polk Award winner for environmental journalism. Long time journalist, and therefore part of the tribe that I belong to and always have. Hi, Tamara.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're going to be at this thing at Floridorama Saturday, right? The Literary Festival?
I am. I'm so excited. That's such a fun place, and I think a lot of interesting readers will be there, and I'll be there selling my quirky Florida books.
Quirky, everything's quirky Florida at Floridorama, so fit right in. I write a few quirky Florida books, too, but very different from yours. Half of your stuff is mysteries, is thrillers, and half of them are romance novels. But you write the mysteries under a slightly different name, as Tara Lush.
Yes, I do. I don't write a lot of romance anymore. Mm-hmm. I started writing fiction when I was still a journalist, and I started writing romance, and I wrote about 15 romances, and then I pivoted to cozy mystery, and now I write cozy mystery and traditional mystery and paranormal mystery.
What does cozy mystery mean?
Cozy mystery is like Murder, She Wrote. It's like mystery without gore and mystery without, you know, graphic sex or graphic violence. Uh-huh. So Murder, She Wrote, Only Murders in the Building, Knives Out. Those are really good examples.
Oh, yeah. Do you have to hold yourself back? It'd be great to have like an eviscerated corpse in
a
this
little
sequence.
Bit. It's hard not to swear. It's hard because I'm a former news person, yeah. So it's hard not to swear. So that is the hardest part, is
a
not
woman
swearing.
After my own heart, right here. I often tell people I remember newsrooms with where everybody smoked. And then when you got off work, everybody went to the bar.
That's exactly that. When I started, that's how a lot of the older folks in the newsroom were. And they kept a bottle of like whiskey in their cabinet and stuff.
But everybody, there was always an ashtray next to the, you know, when I started, they were just starting to use computers. Where are you from originally?
I'm originally from California. Mm-hmm. And I spent half of my childhood in Northern California and half in Vermont. Mm-hmm. And I spent a lot of time, I went to school in Boston, and eventually my mentor at the Burlington Free Press, Jeff Good, is a name you might remember from the Times. He won a Pulitzer for editorials at the St. Pete Times, then St. Pete Times, said you should go to the St. Pete Times. And so I did. And in January of 2000, I packed up my little car from Vermont and I came to Florida, and I've been here ever since.
What did you know from Florida?
I had only been here once on spring break, and I didn't remember much, frankly. I was kind of terrified because I covered crime in Vermont, where there were three murders a year at the time.
Yeah.
And like one was a hunting murder, you know, like an accidental death.
Yeah.
And then I came to Vermont and, you know, I came to Florida and basically all hell broke loose. And just I covered crime in Pasco County, which was completely insane. Like,
oh my God.
Murderers confessed to me, you know, like just the craziest. The first week there was a school shooting. The first week I was on the job at the Times in Pasco County, there was a school shooting. I've covered a lot of really insane crime.
Did you know it was going to be that way?
I mean, I kind of did. I didn't know. I didn't know at the time. Like, I was coming from a very sort of idyllic, rural, liberal state in Vermont. And I knew, you know, like, when I came here, everyone was like, oh, Howard Dean, he's so liberal. And I was like, ugh, he's not that liberal. Because I was in Vermont, you know, and Howard Dean, to most to most left Vermonters, was, like, pretty middle of the road.
Okay.
So there was a big adjustment. Florida was a big adjustment in many ways. And every time I think about leaving, I can't imagine where else I'd go. And so I am still here.
Well, you know, that's interesting. You say that Florida kind of roped you in a manner of speaking. Because I was going to ask you about the origins of your interest in journalism. It's always been my contention that one doesn't really seek out a career in journalism. Journalism finds you. Hmm. And it grabs you and says, you're doing this. Once you get a taste for it, and that's a different kind of creativity.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up, one of my favorite books growing up was Harriet the Spy. And it was about a little girl who spied on her neighbors and wrote down her observations in a notebook. Mm. I don't know why that appealed to me in suburban California, but it did. And and then when I was in high school, I was on, it was essentially the debate team, but back then in the olden days, they called it forensics, the art of public speaking. And my category actually was radio, and I would have to take Associated Press Newswire and put it into a 3-minute tight newscast and read it. Radio announcing was my first love, as you can imagine. And my first journalism job was in radio in a small station in Massachusetts. I worked at my college's radio station, Emerson College, WERS 88.5, I believe it was. And I loved radio. And really, all I wanted to do was be a radio journalist. But obviously, that was waning even by the time I graduated in the early 90s.
Oh, sure.
And so I was actually laid off from my first radio journalism job. And so I got a job at a newspaper.
Boy, talk about, I mean, we talk about newspaper journalism and the various drains it's circled and continues to. But radio.
Right.
Boy, radio is not the same, even the way it was.
It is not. I remember there was radio newscasts, things like WBZ and 1010. I think 1010 Winds is still an all radio, an all news radio in New York City. But that's what I wanted to do. Is I wanted to be like a roving radio journalist for the Associated Press.
Yeah.
And obviously, by the time I got to the Associated Press, there were even very few of those left.
Tamara L. Murrow.
That would be fun.
There we go.
It would still be fun.
That's cute. So you were at the Times from when to when?
I was at the Times from 2000 until about 2007, 2008. Mm-hmm. I ended up being the statewide general assignment person at the Times, and I was stationed down in Miami for a while. And then I left the Times. Everybody thought I was insane, but I wanted to stay in Miami. I didn't want to come back up to Tampa. And I got a job, weirdly, at the Miami New Times, which was a wonderful experience and a crazy job writing about absolutely insane things in Miami, like just crazy things.
I'm sorry, I think Miami makes the rest of the state look normal.
I mean, my 5 years in Miami were delightful, and I still miss Miami every day. And then after about 2 years at the New Times, I got a job offer at the Associated Press. I missed breaking news. And I figured if I really wanted to do breaking news and possibly have a shot going anywhere else, the Associated Press would be it. And I had I was at the AP for 13 years.
So what does the AP do? They assign you to a bureau? Were you in the Tampa Bay Bureau? And then you satellite out to cover things? I don't really know how that works.
Sort of. I started in the Miami Bureau. So there were a lot of people. And at that time, the other than the hubs like New York, Los Angeles, the bigger hubs, the bureaus weren't 24 hours. There was a time when all of the bureaus, you know, you had to work the overnight, you got hired, you worked the overnight, and I never had wanted to do that. So that's why I never had applied. So by that time, they didn't have overnights in Miami. And so, yeah, I had certain beats. Eventually, I came back up to Tampa because my husband liked this area better than Miami. And
of course.
Yeah. And I knew we could buy a house here, too, as opposed to Miami.
Yeah.
And the traffic also was a real killer there. So, I had a variety of beats, but a lot of it was breaking news. A lot of it was, you know, even though I covered agriculture and the citrus industry, but when a mass shooting happened, I had to go.
But you didn't just stay in Miami is the idea.
No. And eventually I came back to Tampa. And at that time, the correspondent in Tampa was our mutual friend, Mitch Stacy. Mm-hmm. And so he and I worked out of the Tampa Bay Times. That was my second stint at the Tampa Bay Times building in downtown St. Pete.
Yeah.
And so we worked there for several years. And then Mitch went to Ohio and I became the correspondent in Tampa.
You said you covered mass shootings, and I have read your biography, and obviously Pulse was one of these, and there's maybe Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, and
yes,
you know,
doesn't
that wear you down? I mean, oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, so it's interesting. So by the time the Parkland shooting and Marjorie Stoneman Douglas happened, I had probably covered like 8 mass shootings. And sometimes I would go there, like there was one in Sutherland Springs, Texas. They would send me there in person to write a story. And other times, like the Parkland one, I would stay in my house or in my office, which by then was in my house.
Yeah.
And I would basically rewrite everybody out in the field. Like they would send their clips and their quotes to me and I would rewrite.
Sure, it's done 100 different ways.
Right.
Certainly.
So every day for 3 weeks, you know, you would have 10 different versions of the same story.
Yeah.
And when you're writing a mass shooting story, 10 different versions day in and day out. You know, no, I wasn't there talking to the victims' families, which is incredibly hard, but it's all incredibly hard. But yes, I was at Pulse, you know, the morning after it happened. I also covered the aftermath of the Haiti earthquake. I was in Haiti about 24 hours after the earthquake happened. And I also covered 13 executions in Stark. I had, you know, I think the thing is, I took a sabbatical in 2019, actually. The AP was so generous, and they had sabbaticals for their journalists, which is wonderful.
Kind of need that sometimes.
Yeah. So I took 9 months, and I wrote fiction. I wrote my romance fiction. And then at the end of 2019, my friends at the AP and my bosses were like, do you want to come back? And I was very much on the fence. And I wasn't sure. And I thought, okay, I'm going to come back. This was around September of 2019. I'm going to come back. They were going to put me on an election team where I'd be roving around the country and talking to voters. Seemed like a great assignment. And then I came back and COVID happened and 2020 happened and January 6th happened in 2021. And frankly, my gallbladder died. And I was in the hospital here in St. Pete. And
your gallbladder was trying to tell you something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I was in the hospital and I said, if I get out of this without, my grandmother died of gallbladder cancer. So it was a real concern that my gallbladder was failing. And I was like, if I get out of this without any major problems, I'm quitting. And so at the age of 50, I had just turned 50, I gave my notice. And everybody thought I was kind of insane because obviously the AP was a union job. And I was like, I'm quitting my job to write fiction full time.
You had already published something.
I had already published a bunch of romances. And I had some traditional published books, some self-published books. And I also had a movie option, which we can talk about more.
Yeah.
I knew that I could do it because of the sabbatical. I knew I could stay afloat with my fiction.
It's a tough business.
It's a very tough business. And I don't think enough people talk about how mentally damaging it is to be in journalism.
Yeah. Well, I was talking about fiction writing's a tough business.
Oh, yeah, that's
but
a tough
journalism,
business.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It will, as I said before, it will wear you down, especially the kind of beat you had.
Yeah, yeah. There was just no time to think. I mean, especially with the Associated Press, which was so breaking news oriented, It was relentless, and I just felt like I couldn't think. I couldn't get a straight sentence, and I really had burnt out, really, is what had happened. And it occurred to me a few years later that I'm a far better journalist than I am a fiction writer. Like, I'm a pretty decent fiction writer. I'm okay. But I'm a far better journalist. But the problem is that journalism and the thing that I'm best at in life is the thing that is the worst for my mental health. And so I had to make a decision. And so I didn't, you know, I had turned 50 and I was like, I don't want to die from stress at 60. I don't want to have a heart attack at 58 like my mother did. So I left and I have had the best 5 years of my life.
That's fantastic
like,
to hear.
Like I almost feel guilty because the state of the world is so terrible right now. But personally, like, I have this charmed life, and I feel so incredibly grateful and blessed for that.
Well, Tamara, I mean, Tamara, excuse me.
It's okay.
I vacillate, as you can see. The thing is that I think you've probably justified this in your own mind, too, that all these things are happening, and we're not going to talk about them now, but there's always journalists out there. If you're not doing it, somebody else is going to cover it. And that must placate you a little bit. Like,
I don't know if someone else is covering it. They closed the Tampa Bay Bureau at the AP.
Did they?
So, no. I mean, they named somebody after me, an excellent journalist, and, you know, and now he's not there.
Tough to keep jobs
so,
in journalism these
yeah,
days.
Yeah, I don't know if somebody's covering it. I'm not entirely sure with the rise of AI and the rise of private equity in news. I don't know if somebody's covering it. But honestly, it's not, you know, I tried to do my part and I tried to tell people about what would happen, and it did.
Yeah.
And so I've had to give that up. The world, the weight of the world is not fully on my shoulders.
Let's switch gears here a little bit. Because we're going to go straight down that rabbit hole. We'll never get out of here. Was fiction always something that was sort of in the back of you? When you're a young writer, a young journalist, one day I want to try writing romance or mystery or, you know, something along those lines.
It was. Yeah. When I was little, I wrote essentially like in the 70s or early 80s, I wrote like Raiders of the Lost Ark fan fiction. Like I kind of hoped my life would be like this swashbuckling adventure with like archaeologists and like a hot dude with like cargo pants. And I mean, I kind of have that.
I'm sorry I didn't wear my cargo pants today.
And then when I was a very early journalist at the Burlington Free Press, I remember buying a paperback. It was like how to write a romance novel because I loved romance novels. Mm-hmm. But I didn't have time. Like I just didn't have the time to do it. And back then it wasn't as easy. You didn't self-publish. And then in around 2013, 2014, I kind of was like, yeah, I want to give this a shot. And I wrote my first romantic suspense.
How hard was it? I always think I want to try writing fiction and man, I just can't. It's like I can't get out of bed in the morning. I can't do it.
It is hard.
You have to have a discipline, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that like the daily journalism thing really helped me with discipline.
Yeah.
But I mean, it is hard. Some days are really hard, you know?
Where did the ideas come from? I mean, I was thinking about, what did I write down here? First of all, you said something cool on your website about the sheep detectives, which Amy and I really enjoyed too.
Yeah.
She wanted to see it because she's a huge Hugh Jackman fan. Okay, fair enough.
Right.
I'll go. But it was cool.
It was well done.
Yeah.
It was really well plotted.
So I wonder if things like, well, let's go here first, because it's a question that lots of people have asked you, I think. You know, how did your journalism influence your mystery writing?
It did a lot.
I think about somebody like Michael Connelly, who covered, you know, L.A. cops and crime for years and years, and suddenly he's writing about it as if he knows all about it, and by God, he does. Tell me how it imbued what you do.
Well, I mean, Florida is, I mean, as we know as journalists, it's a gift. Like, there's no shortage of interesting details in Florida.
You must know Craig Pittman.
Right. Craig and I, I'm very proud that Craig, actually, about my book, Gator Queen, he said, I out Hyacin with Gator Queen.
That's high praise.
It is high praise. It's the best review I've ever had. Florida is just inherently, it's not only inherently weird, but it's inherently tragic, comic, and wonderful all at the same time. It's surprising. I think Florida is the purest distillation of America. And I've interviewed Gary Mormino a lot about the Florida dream. And I try to infuse that in all of my books. It's a lot easier to do that with mysteries than it is romance. Because people who are reading romance really are there for the relationship. But people who read mysteries, especially cozy mysteries where the setting is so important, I try to infuse that Florida ethos in my stories.
Well, let's talk about Randy Wayne White, that Florida is a character in his books.
Yes, it is. I think most Florida writers, I mean, the ones I know, Hyacin, Tim Dorsey, Edna Buchanan, Randy Wayne White.
Yeah. Try saying that fast.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
You can't not write about Florida. Lauren Groff, it's hard not to write about Florida as a character because it is so unusual. I mean, I called it, in one of my books, I dedicated it to Florida, my problematic muse. And that's what it is. Like, that's how I think of Florida.
I'm stealing that one I write a little bit to go with this. She talks about Florida, her problematic muse.
It's true.
So how many books are there? I don't know if we said that while the tape was running.
So for mysteries, I have 4 books in the Coffee Lovers mystery series. Mm-hmm. I have 9 books in a paranormal mystery series set in a town like Casadega.
Wow.
And then I also have 2 books set in Vermont. It's a spinoff to the paranormal series. There's witches in Vermont. And I'm also currently working on a new contemporary series set in a place like Gulfport, with a person who moves here from Boston and runs a flower truck and solves mysteries.
Wow.
Yeah.
Murder, She Blooms.
Yes.
That was clever. Bill.
That is clever. I might use that as the series title.
And the romance stuff is kind of gone on the back burner at this point?
Well, it kind of has. I'll be very frank with you. I started writing romance when I was, just prior to going through perimenopause. Mm. And that got me through perimenopause. And now that I'm through that, I just want to write about murder. So I don't want to write about men anymore. Sorry.
I'm sorry. I laughed. I just want to write about men.
I'd rather kill men than sleep with them. No, sorry to my husband. Seriously, like I also feel like I aged out of romance.
Like, I was going to say you feel like you grew up a little bit.
Well, kind of. I mean, yeah, I just feel like I aged out. Like romance is really, women of all ages read romance. I still read romance. I love romance. But I find that now it's harder to market to women who are my age and older, Gen X. A lot of younger women are reading it. And frankly, I can't identify. Like when I was dating, you know, a man still... I made eye contact and he sent me a drink at the bar, and now it's apps and whatever. And I can't relate to how people relate to the opposite sex now. So, and frankly, other than my husband, you're the first man I've talked to in a very long time.
Okay,
so,
well, okay.
But it's really much easier with Cozy Mystery, because then I can have all women and they sleuth, and then it's like there's a romance. There's romance in my mysteries, but it's very light.
Cozy Mysteries. I think we started with that and we're going to close with that because I think that's a
cozy. It's like gentle murder.
I'm adding that to my vernacular now. You know?
Gentle murder.
Hey, this is a cozy mystery.
It's a cozy mystery.
I mean, well, I might want to follow this up here because I asked you about Dateline and crime and true crime TV, which is, you know, there's a plethora of this stuff out there now. Do you watch any of that?
No. I mean, occasionally I'll watch like a documentary, like a true crime. I kind of like cult documentaries. I do. I will confess that. I don't watch a lot of like true crime, you know, like Murder ID or whatever.
Some of that stuff's so badly done, too.
Yeah,
the good ones are interesting.
Yeah, some of the documentaries are good. I just sometimes I feel like it's kind of exploitive.
Yeah.
And after covering crime and after being the person who knocks on the door of the victim's family, you know, the true crime podcasters are not out there, you know, parking their car and walking a half a block in the heat to go to somebody's door and to get their door slammed in their face or whatever. I just, as somebody who did it and who was the primary source for those podcasts, I don't know.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that. Let's close with that.
Okay.
Tamara Lush, books in hand. We'll look forward to seeing you Saturday at Floridorama at the Literary Festival. It's 12 to 6. I'll be out there hawking vintage St. Pete books as usual. And we'll look forward to seeing you there and hopefully, you know, checking out the line at your table to buy these amazing books of yours.
I can't wait. It'll be really exciting.
Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.